brain. Which cells are communicating with which cells, with which chemicals, and then in what quantities of those chemicals. So there was a lot of meaning in my life because I was performing this type of research during the day. But then in the evenings and on the weekends, I traveled as an advocate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. But on the morning of December 10, 1996, I woke up to discover that I had a brain disorder of my own. A blood vessel exploded in the left half of my brain. And in the course of 4 hours, I watched my brain completely deteriorate in its ability to process all information. On the morning of the hemorrhage, I could not walk, talk, read, write, or recall any of my life. I essentially became an infant in a woman's body. If you've ever seen a human brain, it's obvious that the two hemispheres are completely separate from one another. And I have brought for you a real human brain.
Yes. 有没有看过真的?
有。 So this is a real human brain. This is the front of the brain, the back of the brain with a spinal cord hanging down. And this is how it would be positioned inside of my head. And when you look at the brain, it's obvious that the two cerebral cortices are completely separate from one another. For those of you who understand computers, our right hemisphere functions like a parallel processor, while our left hemisphere functions like a serial processor. The two hemispheres do communicate with one another through the corpus callosum, which is made up of some 300 million axonal fibers. But other than that, the two hemispheres are completely separate. Because they process information differently, each of our hemispheres think about different things, they care about different things, and dare I say, they have very different personalities. Excuse me. Thank you. It's been a joy. Our right human hemisphere is all about this present moment. It's all about right here, right now. Our right hemisphere, it thinks in pictures, and it learns kinesthetically through the movement of our bodies. Information in the form of energy streams in simultaneously through all of our sensory systems, and then it explodes into this enormous collage of what this present moment looks like, what this present moment smells like and tastes like, what it feels like, and what it sounds like. I am an energy being connected to the energy all around me through the consciousness of my right hemisphere. We are energy beings connected to one another through the consciousness of our right hemispheres as one human family. And right here, right now, we are brothers and sisters on this planet, here to make the world a better place. And in this moment, we are perfect, we are whole, and we are beautiful. My left hemisphere, our left hemisphere, is a very different place. Our left hemisphere thinks linearly and methodically. Our left hemisphere is all about the past, and it's all about the future. Our left hemisphere is designed to take that enormous collage of the present moment and start picking out details, details, and more details about those details. It then categorizes and organizes all that information, associates it with everything in the past we've ever learned, and projects into the future all of our possibilities. And our left hemisphere thinks in language. It's that ongoing brain chatter that connects me and my internal world to my external world. It's that little voice that says to me, hey, you gotta remember to pick up bananas on your way home. I need them in the morning. It's that calculating intelligence that knows, that reminds me when I have to do my laundry. But perhaps most important, it's that little voice that says to me, I am. I am. And as soon as my left hemisphere says to me, I am, I become separate. I become a single, solid individual, separate from the energy flow around me and separate from you. And this is the portion of my brain that I lost on the morning of my stroke. On the morning of the stroke, I woke up to a pounding pain behind my left eye. And it was the kind of pain, caustic pain, that you get when you bite into ice cream. And it just gripped me, and then it released me. And then it just gripped me, and then it released me. And it was very unusual for me to ever experience any kind of pain, so I thought, okay, I'll just start my normal routine. So I got up and I jumped onto my CardioGlider, which is a full body, full exercise machine. And I'm jamming away on this thing, and I'm realizing that my hands look like primitive claws grasping onto the bar. And I thought, that's very peculiar, and I looked down at my body, and I thought, whoa, I'm a weird looking thing. And it was as though my consciousness had shifted away from my normal perception of reality, where I'm the person on the machine having the experience, to some esoteric space where I'm witnessing myself having this experience. It was all very peculiar, and my headache was just getting worse, so I get off the machine, and I'm walking across my living room floor, and I realize that everything inside of my body has slowed way down. And every step is very rigid and very deliberate. There's no fluidity to my pace, and there's this constriction in my area of perception, so I'm just focused on internal systems. And I'm standing in my bathroom getting ready to step into the shower, and I could actually hear the dialogue inside of my body. I heard a little voice saying, okay, you muscles, you gotta contract, and you muscles, you relax. And then I lost my balance, and I'm propped up against the wall. And I looked down at my arm, and I realized that I can no longer define the boundaries of my body. I can't define where I begin and where I end, because the atoms and the molecules of my arm blended with the atoms and molecules of the wall. And all I could detect was this energy. And I'm asking myself, what is wrong with me? What is going on? And in that moment, my left hemisphere brain chatter, went totally silent. Just like someone took a remote control and pushed the mute button. Total silence. And at first I was shocked to find myself inside of a silent mind. But then I was immediately captivated by the magnificence of the energy around me. And because I could no longer identify the boundaries of my body, I felt enormous and expansive. I felt at one with all the energy that was, and it was beautiful there. And then all of a sudden, my left hemisphere comes back online, and it says to me, hey, we got a problem, we gotta get some help. And I'm going, oh, I got a problem. So it's like, okay, I got a problem. But then I immediately drifted right back out into the consciousness, and I affectionately refer to this space as La La Land. But it was beautiful there. Imagine what it would be like to be totally disconnected from your brain chatter that connects you to the external world. So here I am in this space, and my job and any stress related to my job, it was gone. And I felt lighter in my body. And imagine all of the relationships in the external world and any stressors related to any of those, they were gone. And I felt this sense of peacefulness. And imagine what it would feel like to lose 37 years of emotional baggage. Oh, I felt euphoria. It was beautiful there. And then again, my left hemisphere comes online and it says, hey, you've got to pay attention. We've got to get help. And I'm thinking, I've got to get help. I've got to focus. So I get out of the shower and I'm mechanically dressed. I'm walking around my apartment and I'm thinking, I've got to get to work. Can I drive? And in that moment, my right arm went totally paralyzed by my side. Then I realized, oh my gosh, I'm having a stroke. And then the next thing my brain says to me is, wow. This is so cool. How many brain scientists have the opportunity to study their own brain from the inside out? And then it crosses my mind, but I'm a very busy woman. I don't have time for a stroke. It's like, okay, I can't stop the stroke from happening, so I'll do this for a week or two, and then I'll get back to my routine. Okay. I got to call work. I could remember the number at work. So I remembered in my office I had a business card with my number on it. So I go into my business room, I pull out a 3-inch stack of business cards, and I'm looking at the card on top, and even though I could see clearly in my mind's eye what my business card looked like, I couldn't tell if this was my card or not, because all I could see were pixels. And the pixels of the words blended with the pixels of the background and the pixels of the symbols, and I just couldn't tell. And then I would wait for what I call a wave of clarity. And in that moment, I would be able to reattach to normal reality. And I could tell, that's not the card, that's not the card, that's not the card. It took me 45 minutes to get 1 inch down inside of that stack of cards. In the meantime, for 45 minutes, the hemorrhage is getting bigger in my left hemisphere. I do not understand numbers. I do not understand the telephone, but it's the only plan I have. So I take the foam pad and I put it right here. I take the business card, I put it right here, and I'm matching the shape of the squiggles on the card to the shape of the squiggles on the foam pad. But then I would drift back out into la-la land and not remember if when I come back if I'd already dialed those numbers. So I had to wield my paralyzed arm like a stump and cover the numbers as I went along and push them so that as I would come back to normal reality, I'd be able to tell, yes, I've already dialed that number. Eventually, the whole number gets dialed, and I'm listening to the phone, and my colleague picks up the phone, and he says to me, and I think to myself, oh my gosh, he sounds like a golden retriever. And so I say to him, clear in my mind, I say to him, this is Jill, I need help. And what comes out of my voice is, I think, oh my gosh, I sound like a golden retriever. So I couldn't know, I didn't know that I couldn't speak or understand language until I tried. So he recognizes that I need help, and he gets me help. And a little while later, I'm riding in an ambulance from one hospital across Boston to Mass General Hospital, and I curl up into a little fetal ball. And just like a balloon with the last bit of air just right out of the balloon, I just felt my energy lift and just, I felt my spirit surrender. And in that moment, I knew that I was no longer the choreographer of my life, and either the doctors rescue my body and give me a second chance at life, or this was perhaps my moment of transition. When I woke later that afternoon, I was shocked to discover that I was still alive. When I felt my spirit surrender, I said goodbye to my life, and my mind was now suspended between two very opposite planes of reality. Stimulation coming in through my sensory systems felt like pure pain. Light burned my brain like wildfire, and sounds were so loud and chaotic that I could not pick a voice out from the background noise, and I just wanted to escape, because I could not identify the position of my body in space. I felt enormous and expansive, like a genie just liberated from her bottle. And my spirit soared free like a great whale gliding through a sea of silent euphoria. Nirvana, I found nirvana. I remember thinking, there's no way I would ever be able to squeeze the enormousness of myself back inside this tiny little body. But then I realized, but I'm still alive. I'm still alive, and I have found nirvana. And if I have found nirvana, and I'm still alive, then everyone who is alive can find nirvana. And I pictured a world filled with beautiful, peaceful, compassionate, loving people who knew that they could come to this space at any time, and that they could purposely choose to step to the right of their left hemispheres and find this peace. And then I realized what a tremendous gift this experience could be. What a stroke of insight this could be to how we live our lives. And it motivated me to recover. 2.5 weeks after the hemorrhage, the surgeons went in and they removed a blood clot the size of a golf ball that was pushing on my language centers. Here I am with my mama, who's a true angel in my life. It took me 8 years to completely recover. So, who are we? We are the life force power of the universe with manual dexterity and two cognitive minds. And we have the power to choose moment by moment who and how we want to be in the world. Right here, right now, I can step into the consciousness of my right hemisphere where we are. I am the life force power of the universe. I am the life force power of the 50 trillion beautiful molecular geniuses that make up my form. At one with all that is. Or I can choose to step into the consciousness of my left hemisphere, where I become a single individual, a solid, separate from the flow, separate from you. I am Dr. Jill Volte Taylor, intellectual, neuroanatomist. These are the we inside of me. Which would you choose? Which do you choose? And when? I believe that the more time we spend choosing to run the deep inner peace circuitry of our right hemispheres, the more peace we will project into the world, and the more peaceful our planet will be. And I thought that was an idea worth spreading.
大家都令从看到，我叫你们戴上个有色的眼睛，先不管他的所有的他表达的内容，你们听到了没有？你们如果只看第一遍，你们只觉得很好，你要真的多听几遍。他现在告诉我们，我们的左脑跟右脑是，对，我就很naive，我都不知道我们脑是事实上是可以 separate 的。你们本来就知道吗？
不知道，
有的人知道，我是不知道，我以为脑就一团混的这东西，我不知道可以 physically 真的可以这样分开。然后他这样一讲完以后，以前人家每次说你左脑管什么，右脑管什么，你听的好像没什么概念，你看了这样 physical 以后，你会有概念了。他就跟你讲我们的右脑是什么，
当下，
对，然后左脑呢，
过去
跟未来是很理智的，对吧？可是右脑是可以，他就说如果你左脑完全 shut down 的时候，你的右脑可以，你只感到 energy， 你可以跟宇宙的 energy 都连在一起。那其实不是很多人，我们在
他们天人合一，可能就是那个
天人，不要说他们的天人合一，我们也一样，我们也做 prayer， 我们也做这个，我们是不是一样也希望跟我们的上帝有这样沟通，有这样连结，其实是一体的事情。那他这样子分析，你就突然之间，可是你看到透过他自己的 experience， 他是不是很丰富的肢体在表达，对不对？是你看到，那最重要就是说，他是从，你看，这是一个非常 unique 的，因为他是脑神经学家，只有他可以说，我一辈子在研究脑，对不对？他为什么要研？刚刚看他为什么要研究脑？
什么？他的哥哥 brother，
他的 brother 对不对？有这个问题，所以他开始，这就是说有一个人有问题，他 devote 了他的一生。所以当他自己发生这个问题的时候，你听到他的 description， 怎么样？很 real， 对不对？如果你换一个你没有这样子经历的人，你不知道这可能没办法像他这样 describe。所以这一步是值得你反复的看。我觉得特别对我们基督徒，我们讲到那种你怎么样把左脑右脑分开，我们想要 peace， 我们想要所有的。都在脑筋这一半，对不对？
所以是不是在什么祷告的时候，好吗？
你刚进来还是你赶上了？
我刚才进来，那我说是不是这就跟我们祷告的时候眼睛闭起来，有一个闭起来或是不闭起来有很大的区别？
我想到时候不闭也可以的，这完全就是说，看你这个，看你的。
是不是闭起来的时候就把我的左脑那部分？
绝对不会只靠一个必就可以把它分开的。这个是当他形容的这样子的时候，你必跟不必，你怎么有的人必起来，他脑筋里头念头一样，东想西想，跟不必一样。但是必的目的是什么？因为你张开眼睛就跟世界就连接，对不对？所以你闭上来的时候，第一步至少你好像跟外头不连接了。可是那不表示你脑子里头不再左想右想。可是 definitely 是好的一步，就是说把世界的先分开，然后接下来还有很多东西，对不对？那大家还看到什么？从这里头，从我们分析一个好的 presentation， 除了故事，他讲的那个话的声音语量，你是不是你感受得到吗？是不是感受到他的那个 passion， 对不对？所以我把这一篇放在 passion 里头，其实我也可以放在，是不是一个非常好的一个 storytelling， 对不对？他像在讲故事，把一个这么事情，你看他讲起故事的那种感觉。
肢体语言，
肢体语言这个好像很多都有，但我只能放，我暂时把它放一个开一个。还有什么？你们还看到什么？有什么打动你的？
我觉得很正向，就是因为中风毕竟是一件大家都会觉得很悲惨的事情，但是他觉得这是一个礼物，就是他可能是生涯或是研究上一个很的礼物，就是独特的经历，让他跟其他脑神经学家与众不同。
好，这个是他花了多少年康复了？
8年。
他花了8年时间康复了。如果他现在没有康复，他可能现在话都讲不出来，对不对？所以，那从完全康复到这个中间，他是花了8年。但是我们现在有很多，包括我们自己周围一定有朋友，他们没有完全康复，对不对？那他们是什么？你把它称为 handicap 吗？如果你听了他刚刚这样讲法。如果因为这样子，他也许没完全康复，但是让他可以 sense 到这样子的 energy， 你能够，我们可以体会到你的 energy 跟着墙上一放，其实你根本不会感觉到是分开，你是跟整个宇宙的 energy 真的那种连接在一起。所以他在讲说 I'm still alive， 对我们讲说很 meaningful 的，就是说这些 energy body 只是一个 body， 那个 energy 都还在的。所以到时候那个 energy 在哪里，我们希望在天堂里，对不对？还有没有？还有没有？大家看到什么？
我觉得还有一个，就是从他父母演讲，我体会到，就是我们有时候说那个残废的孩子啊，他并不痛苦，就是好像就是可以联系得上。
好，我今天其实是准备了3篇，但是我现在今天因为是第一次，我发现如果这样全部放完的时候，有时候一篇我看是，但我们今天一开始浪费了蛮多时间，我看最多2篇、3篇是不可能。如果好的话，一篇也不介意，对不对？因为我会把那个 link 都给你们，你们可以回去看。那今天确实是没有时间放第二篇，但是其中有一篇那个女的，她是生来就是，很快她就被截肢了。然后呢，所以一般人截肢以后就是 so called handicap， 对不对？但是他装上不同的义肢，他是在 Olympic 残障的 Olympic， 他是破世界纪录，然后他就开始把这个义肢呢就变成了他的优势，他请了不同的人帮他设计不同的义肢，所以他在这个演讲上头他是173公分，他那个义肢让他变成185公分高，所以他这个站在，那他就中间就讲到，他跟他一个女朋友去吃饭，那个女朋友就说 ，Amy， this is so unfair。他说什么 unfair？ 就是他突然之间可不变那么高，他可以随心所欲的在变换他的。所以他到一个小学的时候，跟一群孩子们在讲到他这个，孩子们一开始都摸那些都觉得是残废的，那就开始让他们想。然后那有个孩子就突然讲说，他说你可以做这个，你可以变成那个这个像变形人里头的一个。这个孩子就说，你应该可以飞啊。所以就说你看起来好像是一个残障，但他那篇讲的目的不是在讲说他有多少个腿，他讲他的12双腿，他不是在讲那个腿，而是在讲说他怎么样，你可以，你认为他是残废，他可以激发他的潜能，他现在创造出不同的这样子的一个过程。所以那一篇也是很有意思的啊。然后第三篇我有一个写的是叫什么，第三个题目是什么？你为什么会怎么样？
不能有伟大，我觉得不能有伟大的事。
这个听起来好像怎么样，好像很负面，对不对？那它里头就是举出了为什么这几个大理由，你为什么是不会有伟大的事业。那我请大家仔细听，它这是一个反面的，在这个反面的在讲法，每一个都说你为什么不能，其实到最后 bottom line 就是 你都听了，可是你会给自己很多理由，到最后我不能做。那这个理由包括了，就是说，我的家庭很重要，这个 career 上的，就是说，就是有很多很多各式各样。他讲了五点理由了，那他其实是用一个一般人是用正面的话去鼓励人，对吧？他把这个用成一个很 humor， 在讲说，哎，你为什么 fail？ 他不讲你为什么 fail， 他讲说是个五点的理由。所以你们看那个的时候，他也还蛮风趣的。但是你们换一个角度去看他，不是说来说你为什么我不能成立伟大的事业？他你当然是说，但反向来思考，就是说，如果你想成立有一个伟大的事业，你该怎么做？他让你反向的思考。那这里头还有没有看到什么？
他语言运用让人觉得非常身临其境的感觉。
他语言的这样子的运用让你觉得非常身临其境，对不对？他的 describe 整个这个过程，就是刚刚讲的，是一个非常 good 的一个 storyteller， 对不对？
我跟您分享我的见解，他本身是一个 scientist， 就一个科学家、神经学家，然后他也我觉得他基本上他的左脑功能是非常非常强。
对，
一边都在他经历这个中风的过程里面，他还是非常 calm down， 而且很具逻辑性的在分析每一个 step， 包括他找电话号码、拨电话，包括他已经感官。我觉得这段中风的过程是他的经历，就像我们去旅行、去旅程一样，他等于是每一个 step 他都记录他的过程，还包括他的 feeling， 来验证他本身是一个神经科学家，他在理论上提出来，他整个生命之中，他自己亲身去体验过这个 journal， 然后把它记录下来，然后包括就是说他本身的专业结合他的理论，然后活生生的体现在没有经过这个旅程过程的人身上，我觉得是一个理论在包括他自己真实的一个旅程的那种体验，
一个体验，
对对。
好，这边
我这边也看到一个专业害到自己专业，当他在那一刹那他知道他中风，他居然不是打911，他只要拨了911三个字，就算他不讲话，两分钟后警察也一定要过来看发生什么事，所以他花了45分钟耽误自己，因为他的逻辑在告诉自己不要找，我要 match， 这是我看到的另外专业害到专业自己的这一部分。但是他的 passion 我看到了，就是他到后面讲到，你也看到很 emotional 也出来了，在讲哦，我其实很高兴他要分析的时候是右脑那一段，是跟这个宇宙的连接，是那个 peaceful， 去那个 harmony， 他要去追寻，这是我觉得很棒的地方。
好，还有呢？
我觉得他
等一下，这个先举手要讲，要讲话要举手。
我注意到他把一个真的人的大脑拿到现场，我觉得就是可能这个是。像我们这样的一般人，就是可能一辈子才会碰到这样、看到这样的精神大脑，所以我觉得就是很 impressive， 就是蛮那个 impressive，
很 impressive，
一下就抓住了观众的心，然后就会就是让观众很期待他会就是
好。对，这个我就是上次讲，就是说很多人几年以后，你根本可能记不得他详细的内容，可是你一定会记得他那个脑子，真实的脑子会在你印象里头深刻。这个就提醒我们说，在你做任何东西，在做演讲，你不是每次都一定有，但是你可以想到说有什么东西可以让人家印象深刻的。那当然不是硬要去找出来，对不对？要somehow如果真正有能够又符合你的这个一个想要表达的事情，那会很 impress， 会让人家真的记得住。所以上一次我已经讲了这个虐文的那个，对不对？你们有人没来没看到啊？那下次再讲，不要一次讲完了。还有呢？
我是觉得他打不了911，因为他看东西都是 pixel 了，他那个他最后打电话号码的时候，他要 match 那个 pixel。
对，当然他这样讲是，他打回去是打给公司，是89位数字，你讲911是3位数字，所以你们都是很逻辑理性在分析的人，但是都是没错了，是没错。可是等到你真正中风的时候，你可能你想都想不到，想都想不到那种事情啊，对对对。Bill 什么？
他非常敬业的。
啊，
非常敬业。
想到非常敬，为什么你会这样想？
因为他一定会想到说要公司公司请。
他还要去公司上班，对不对？
对对。嗯。
这个等下就有另外一篇，这个有一个英国的一个很有名的，很有一个也很好，下次一定会给大家看，讲教育的，可是非常有意思。
上次你们看的题目是什么？
上一次没有。你们如果今天是第一次来的话，上次我们是请大家每个人自我介绍一下，然后介绍一下他来看想要学什么。然后上一次我是介绍整个 TED 这个的来由。那如果你要自己看 TED 的来由的话，你可以到哪里去找得到？
Google。
我太兼容了。你可以 TED.com 对不对？但是他刚刚讲的 Wikipedia 你可以看看，他上面会把这个 TED 的来龙去脉跟大家讲了一下。对，
我们还有15分钟，需不需要看第二段呢？
我们是到几点？
11:15。
想看吗？
看啊。
对，这样子吧，15分钟是大概看不了这个第二段了。我把这里跟网络没连接哦，跟网络有连接上。
好，网络没连接，你的
啊？
没有
啊？
对啊，
OS
吧。啊，看看啊，你们讲的很有道理，我来看一看。但是如果有人要接孩子的什么，随时要走没有关系啊。
哦，明天有点乱，需要有一个人整理它。
好，
不知道你要不要可以找volunteer。
好。
我没有系统，没想到是这样，
好，
如果等一下有人加 group 圈嘛，你可以找 Jennifer 她会弄。
好，我看如果联络不上的话，我就回去就刚刚讲的。好，那个联络不上，没关系，我们还是回到我刚刚的这个，我就放一篇下面的，你们想听那另外两篇的哪一篇？
你有办法就放最精华一段，不要整段吗？
不是，这很难讲的，就是一个演讲的话，大概也看个完整的那个，很难讲。
好不好？这个
Larry Smith 不是15分钟吗？
我看看哪个比较长。
Larry Smith 15分钟
好，这个是 shortest one。短一点，因为下一堂课还有老师要进来。
I want to discuss with you this afternoon why you're going to fail in a great career. I'm an economist. I do dismal. End of the day, it's ready for dismal remarks. I only want to talk to those of you who want a great career. I know some of you have already decided you want a good career. You're going to fail too. Because...Because you're all cheery about failing. Canadian group, undoubtedly. Those trying to have good careers will fail because, really, good jobs are now disappearing. There are great jobs and great careers, and then there are the high workload, high stress, blood-sucking, soul-destroying kinds of jobs.And practically nothing in between. So the people looking for good jobs are going to fail. I want to talk about those looking for great jobs, great careers, and why you're going to fail. First reason is that no matter how many times people tell you, if you want a great career, you have to pursue your passion, you have to pursue your dreams, you have to pursue the greatest fascination in your life.You hear it again and again, and then you decide not to do it. It doesn't matter how many times you download Stephen Jay's Stanford commencement address, you still look at it and decide not to do it. I'm not quite sure why you decide not to do it. You're too lazy to do it, it's too hard. You're afraid if you look for your passion and don't find it, you'll feel like you're an idiot. So then you make excuses about why you're not going to look for your passion. And they are excuses, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to go through a whole long list.Your creativity and thinking of excuses not to do what you really need to do if you want to have a great career. So for example, one of your great excuses is, well, great careers are really and truly, for most people, just a matter of luck. So I'm going to stand around, I'm going to try to be lucky, and if I'm lucky, I'll have a great career. If not, I'll have a good career. But a good career is an impossibility, so that's not going to work. Then your other excuse is, yes, there are special people who pursue their passions, but they are geniuses. They are Stephen Jay. I'm not a genius. When I was 5, I thought I was a genius, but my professors have beaten that idea out of my head long since. And now I know I am completely competent. Now you see, if this was 1950, being completely competent, that would have given you a great career. But guess what? This is almost 2012, and saying to the world, I am totally, completely competent, is damning yourself with the faintest of praise. And then, of course, another excuse. Well, I would do this, but, after all, I'm not weird. Everybody knows that people who pursue their passions are somewhat obsessive, a little strange. Okay, you know, a fine line between madness and genius. I'm not weird. I've read Stephen Jay's biography. Oh my goodness. I'm not that person. I am nice. I am normal. I'm a nice, normal person, and nice, normal people don't have passion. But I still want a great career. I'm not prepared to pursue my passion, so I know what I'm going to do, because I have a solution. I have a strategy. It's the one Mommy and Daddy told me about. Mommy and Daddy told me that if I worked hard, I'd have a good career. So, if you work hard and have a good career, if you work really, really, really hard, you'll have a great career. Doesn't that, like, mathematically make sense? Not. But you've managed to talk yourself into that. You know what? Here's a little secret. You want to work? You want to work really, really, really hard? You know what? You'll succeed. The world will give you the opportunity to work really, 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 really hard. But are you so sure that that's going to give you a great career when all the evidence is to the contrary? So let's deal with those of you who are trying to find your passion. You actually understand that you really had better do it. Never mind the excuses. You're trying to find your passion, and you're so happy. You found something you're interested in. I have an interest. I have an interest. You tell me. You say, I have an interest. I say, that's wonderful. And what are you trying to tell me that you, well, I have an interest. I say, do you have a passion? I have an interest, you say. Your interest is compared to what? Well, I'm interested in this. And what about the rest of humanity's activities? I'm not interested in them. You've looked at them all, have you? No, not exactly. Passion is your greatest love. Passion is the thing that will help you create the highest expression of your talent. Passion, interest, it's not the same thing. Are you really going to go to your sweetie and say, marry me? You are interesting. Won't happen, and you will die alone. What you want is passion. It is beyond interest. You need 20 interests. And then one of them might be grab you, one of them might engage you more than anything else, and then you may have found your greatest love in comparison to all the other things that interest you. And that's what passion is. A friend proposed to his sweetie. He was an economically rational person. He said to his sweetie, let us marry. Let us merge our interests. Yes, he did. I love you truly, he said. I love you deeply. I love you more than any other woman I've ever encountered. I love you more than Mary, Jane, Susie, Penelope, Ingrid, Gertrude, Gretel. I was on a German exchange program then. I love you more than Penneth. All right. She left the room halfway through his enumeration of his love for her. After he got over his surprise at being, turned down, he concluded he'd had a narrow escape from marrying and irrational person, although he did make a note to himself that the next time he proposed, it was perhaps not necessary to enumerate all of the women he had auditioned for the part. But the point stands, you must look for alternatives so that you find your destiny. Or are you afraid of the word destiny? Does the word destiny scare you? That's what we're talking about. And if you don't find the highest expression of your talent, if you settle for interesting, what the hell ever that means, do you know what will happen at the end of your long life? Your friends and family will be gathered in the cemetery, and there, beside your grave site, will be a tombstone. And inscribed on that tombstone, it will say, "Here lies a distinguished engineer who invented Velcro." But what that tombstone should have said in an alternative lifetime, what it should have said if it was your highest expression of talent, was, "Here lies the last Nobel laureate in physics who formulated the grand unified field theory and demonstrated the practicality of warp drive." Velcro indeed. One was a great career. One was a missed opportunity. But then there are some of you, in spite of all these excuses, you will find your passion, and you'll still fail. You can fail because you're not going to do it, because you have invented a new excuse, any excuse to fail, to take action. And this excuse I've heard so many times. Yes. I would pursue a great career, but a value. Human relationships, more than accomplishment. I want to be a great friend. I want to be a great spouse. I want to be a great parent, and I will not sacrifice them on the altar of great accomplishment. What do you want me to say? Now, do you want me to say now, tell you, really, I swear, I don't kick children. Look at the worldview you've given yourself. You're a hero no matter what. And I, by suggesting ever so delicately that you might want a great career, must hate children. I don't hate children, I don't kick them. Yes, there was a little kid wandering through this building when I came here, and no, I didn't kick him. Of course, I had to tell him the building was for adults only and to get out. He mumbled something about his mother, and I told him she'd probably find him outside anyway. Last time I saw him, he was on the stairs crying. What a wimp. What do you mean? That's what you expect me to say? Do you really think it's appropriate that you should actually take children and use them as a shield? You know what will happen someday? You ideal parent, you. The kid will come to you someday and say, "I know what I want to be. I know what I'm going to do with my life. You were so happy." It's the conversation a parent wants to hear, because your kid's good at math and you know you're going to like what comes next. Says your kid, "I have decided I want to be a magician. I want to perform magic tricks on the stage." And what do you say? You say, "That's risky, kid. Might fail, kid. Don't make a lot of money at that, kid. You know, I don't know, kid. You should think about that again, kid. You're so good at math, why don't you?" And a kid interrupts you and says, "But it is my dream. It is my dream to do this." And what are you going to say? You know what you're going to say? "Look, kid, I had a dream once too, but..." But. So how are you going to finish the sentence with your "but"? "But. I had a dream too once, kid, but I was afraid to pursue it." Or are you going to tell them this? "I had a dream once, kid, but then you were born." do you really want to use your family? Do you really ever want to look at your spouse and your kid and see your jailers? There was something you said to your kid.
是不是听起来这个是很负面吗？还是
题目有点负面，但内容
你们看到他在 present 这个时候是非常的 passion， 他所有的这个很激动，对不对？然后仔细想一想，这个回去再看一遍，有时候你不见得抓得到，回去再看一看他讲的。他在我们讲说我们都有 passion， 可是在后面我们都会用很多的 excuse 来把这个事情 normalize， 说我们为什么不去追。那这个东西可以让你好好的思考。那我们下礼拜见，
谢
谢大家。
谢谢。
需要加 WeChat Group， 请到我们后面。
你这个字幕，如果英文的怎么把它弄出来？如果我在家看，
他家里看，他那个他下面会有一个 translation， 他里头可以选二十几种语言，也有英文的。
就是 .com
是吧？对对对，
谢谢。Yeah,
好。